From WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, this is Lake Effect. I'm Mitch Teich. On today's show, city work gets underway soon to take on abandoned and blighted homes, plus seizing an opportunity to create an emergency fund.
It's as simple as making the decision to be disciplined, especially when you have the opportunity to take your tax refund and knock out a significant portion of the amount you've determined that you need to save.
The website Milwaukee Record launches today with plans to honestly evaluate local music. And renowned clean person Jolie Kerr shares the truth about the best cleaning supplies.
I think people are surprised often at how basic and simple most of the products that I recommend people use are. I think dish soap is a great product. It's great. You can clean your floors with it. You can get stains out of your clothes with it. Obviously, wash your dishes with it.
Lake Effect is next after this news update. This is Lake Effects on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. It's great to have you listening today. The city of Milwaukee is taking the first steps in a reinvigorated effort to reduce the impact of abandoned and blighted homes and vacant lots in city neighborhoods. Mayor Tom Barrett's budget calls for spending nearly $12 million on the city's so-called Strong Neighborhoods Investment Plan, which is aimed specifically at properties on the city's rolls. The work will go on over a several-year period. Mayor Barrett joins us in the studio to talk more about the situation. Welcome back to Lake Effect.
It's always great to be on Lake Effect. Thanks, Mitch.
So it was back in January that you added some additional detail. I know there's been an effort for a while, but January, I think you fleshed out this initiative to take on vacant and abandoned houses that are on the city's roll and deal with blighted homes. Let me ask you just a big question first. What is at stake for the city in this? Why is this in the city's best interest?
Well, we want to make sure that we're doing everything we can with this foreclosure crisis that is now really entering its sixth year. And what we saw is we saw several waves. The first wave was the subprime lending. And what surprised me in that was my stereotype, quite honestly, was that most of those people were going to be people who should never have bought a house in the first place. But what we found out when we did the analysis was that the largest group of people that were victims of the subprime foreclosure crisis were people who had actually purchased their homes and then refinanced. So they had good credit and they got a mailer or they got something on, they saw something on TV or got a phone call where someone said, this is so good, it's too good to be true. And they went in and went for these low payments, had the big balloon payment and couldn't handle it. The second wave is one having to do with the downturn in the economy. And what we started seeing is we started seeing the banks increasing their mortgage foreclosures. But now we're actually in the third wave, and that's the tax foreclosure wave, where the city comes in now. And these are for homes that didn't pay taxes in 2010, 2011, 2012. I don't like owning these homes, but right now the city's inventory is well over 1,200 homes that the city owns. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to work with as many community partners, as many lending institutions, as many individuals as we can to move these properties back into circulation. And there's several reasons why that's important. One, I want people to live in these homes. I want families to live in these homes. Two, I don't want to be the landlord for them. It's expensive for the city to keep up these homes, and they're not paying taxes when the city owns them. Third, it's bad for the neighborhoods if you've got boarded up homes. So I want to turn a lose-lose-lose situation into a win-win-win situation.
There's also an issue with blighted homes. The city has to, I guess, prioritize which homes it's, you know, which eggs it's going to put into which baskets.
Exactly.
Is part of this, is the upshot a part of this that some of these homes will be torn down?
Yes. And between now and the next couple of months, you'll probably see 500 homes torn down. And the city's paying for 300 of those. The state's paying for 200 of those to come down. But to put that in perspective, there's probably 155,000 pieces of real estate parcels in the city of Milwaukee. So it's not like you see in Detroit or Cleveland where you're seeing huge areas that are affected. But we do have areas of the city that are severely affected in the central city, particularly on the north side to a lesser extent in the central city on the south side. So we want to make sure that those homes that can't be saved, and that's not our first choice, but if they can't be saved, then we want to take them down. But our preference is to work with people who live in the homes now, if they can, to save those homes or to find buyers for those. For example, just last week we had a home buyers fair where we had over 300 people come. And the city's offering incentives. We're offering up to $20,000 for a forgivable loan. In other words, if you live in the home for a while, you can get that loan forgiven to purchase this property. We're working with lenders to improve that product and add more to it as well. So we really want to get these homes back into circulation.
So the city doesn't want people to come in and try to flip them, if you will.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We want these to be stable. We know that if people are living in these homes and you don't have flippers, it's really positive for the neighborhoods.
Is part of the effort, though, coordinating with other organizations and others who would work towards reducing the impact of these abandoned and blighted homes?
Yeah, and we're working with a number of groups. Axe Housing, for example, is a group that works with low-income buyers so that they can have sustainable ownership. We're working with church groups. We're working with Ezekiel and Micah. We're working with private realtors. We've got five private realtors who are helping us market this. They're getting paid for it. But they've only come on board in the last month and a half, and they've already seen 15 offers on sales. So we're doing that. We're working with some private developers that are reputable. Gorman & Company, for example, has purchased some of these homes and is reestablishing them as livable places as well. So our challenge is so big in terms of, again, this new issue. To put it in perspective, in 2007, we may have foreclosed on 78 homes. Now, again, our inventory is over 1,200. So we want to turn these around and have them be a real part of the neighborhoods again.
And this would be a surprise to many in other parts of the country, I would imagine, who view the foreclosure crisis as being a thing of the past.
Well, what's different about Milwaukee is we have been able to be proactive on this. And what I mean by that is I could see this coming back in 2008. We started a foreclosure partnership in 2008. I started meeting with the banks. We were able to benefit a lot from the federal program, the Neighborhood Stabilization Program, which was very, very good to Milwaukee. We were very frustrated with the state because the state took so much of the money that was there for the settlement of the lawsuit against the banks on foreclosures. It's given us very little. I'm pleased that they've given us $2 million, but frankly, there's still $25 million that I'm thinking, why is that not going to foreclosure-related issues? But we knew in the budget last year that we were going to have to step up our efforts. And I devoted close to $12 million of my budget on this issue, which is something that mayors don't like to do. I mean, I'd rather be cutting ribbons and having openings of places, but I'm committed to the neighborhood. So we're going to do everything we can to stabilize these neighborhoods.
Is it still an uphill battle to attract investment in some of these neighborhoods?
Well, what we've seen, again, a week ago Saturday was a perfect example. We had a lot of interest. And I think with the packages that we're able to put on the table, when I say packages, we're not trying to make money on these homes. What we want to do is we want to make sure that we can get people in the homes. And we don't want to foreclose anymore. So if there are people who are in danger of a foreclosure because they have code violations, we want to work with them. We want to give them loans so they can stay in their homes. I don't get any joy out of taking these homes. So I want to do everything I can to make sure that we're keeping them in circulation.
The benchmarks for this, if I'm not mistaken, 350 homes sold and another 350 homes torn down. Is that right?
Actually, we're gonna probably tear down 500 homes this year. Our goal is to sell 300 homes. We've already sold 80 just in the first three months. So we're on target to hit the goals that we want to hit.
Is there a next phase if and when this all comes to fruition?
Well, again, right now the focus, what people are going to see over the next couple of months is they are going to see some deconstruction and some demolition. Both of those are going to occur. Deconstruction is where you try to save some of the materials. The traditional tearing down a home is going to be the lion's share of it, but in some cases we're going to try to deconstruct them. We want to then go to revitalization. We've got a rent-to-own program so that people who are in the homes can do it. We are trying to, and we are working again, as I said, with private realtors so that we can see if the private real estate market can help us move these. We're actually pleased with the initial results. And then, as I said, we've got these relationships with groups like Axe Housing that help us find people to live in a sustainable situation.
Well, and as you say, 500 homes might be torn down. Presumably, it doesn't benefit anybody to have 500 vacant lots around
neighborhoods. No, it doesn't. And so there we've got, for example, our homegrown program where we're working with the whole issue of foreclosed properties but also urban agriculture and gardens or orchards. we want to make these assets to the communities as well. And so that's why we've put so much effort in the homegrown initiative also.
Another neighborhood level issue, but maybe a bigger economic development issue, is the old Tower Automotive site. What can you tell us about the progress of city efforts to see that site reborn, if you
will? Well, this is a $35 million project, and I'm pleased to report that this year we are going to have the first new construction on that site since the city took ownership. It's a 50,000 square foot building, and it's coming out of the ground this year. We've already had some manufacturing and employers contact us. So the marketing of the overall site is something that we're starting up right now. But that building, the 50,000 square foot building, which can be expanded to 100,000 square feet, we're off to a good start on that. We're very pleased with, even before breaking ground, that there's interest there.
Well, what do you see as the likely outcome of that site? I mean, how much optimism do you have that this is going to be more
than – Well, the template that we're using is the Menominee Valley. And the Menominee Valley, I think by anyone's account, has been a huge success. Keep in mind, 6-7 years ago, you needed an all-terrain vehicle to get from one end of the valley to the other. And now with that industrial park that we have that lies between Miller Park and the Pottawatomie Casino – you're seeing hundreds and hundreds of new jobs, lots of new businesses there. You're seeing the casino that is now adding the hotel. The valley has been a huge success. Now, it has some natural advantages because of its accessibility by rail, by boat, by interstate that the Tower Automotive site doesn't. But we are very committed to the Tower Automotive site because we know that there are so many people in that adjacent neighborhood and those neighborhoods nearby that need jobs. And so we are focusing on it. Again, we've put tens of millions of dollars into this project, knowing that it's a 10, 15-year project.
Before we wrap up, the efforts to develop a strategy for replacing the BMO Harris Bradley Center or potentially renovate it, although I guess the report just came out that it would be cost prohibitive to do that, they're still kind of in a formative stage. And most of the discussion has still been around what the city and the county itself would do to make this happen. How important to you is the idea of a regional approach versus a city-specific approach?
Well, I was disappointed with the public policy paper on this because it identified, for example, that Denver used a 7-county approach to dealing with its amenities. And it knew that, but when it did an analysis, it did not analyze what a multi-county approach to this would be. I have said repeatedly this cannot be funded solely by the city of Milwaukee or Milwaukee County. This is a regional asset. It's an entertainment and cultural asset that serves all of southeastern Wisconsin, serves all of Wisconsin, but primarily all of southeastern Wisconsin. And I don't know if somebody's saying, well, let's steer it in the direction of having it be Milwaukee County, but it cannot be Milwaukee County only.
It seems as though the narrative we hear is that it would be, you know, it's essentially the third rail to talk about this outside of Milwaukee itself. How do you maybe de-escalate that conversation and bring other counties on board?
Well, the reality is, if you look at who uses this facility, a lot of people outside of the city of Milwaukee certainly and Milwaukee County use this facility. I can tell you myself, when I go to Bucks games or Marquette games, I go with my friends from Mequon or Pewaukee. And so to suggest that the city that has one of the highest percentage of people living in poverty in this nation should bear the cost is wrong. And again, what we're trying to do is get out the word that this is a facility that's an entertainment and cultural facility that serves southeastern Wisconsin.
Mayor Barrett, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Mitch.
Tom Barrett is mayor of the city of Milwaukee. We spoke with him about the Strong Neighborhoods Investment Plan and other city issues. For some people, allowing a home foreclosure is unfortunately part of their plan for a financial emergency. We'll learn about some more practical approaches when Lake Effect continues on WUWM.
Well,
Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. We're just about a week away from the deadline to get your taxes filed. If you have a big refund coming, our personal finance contributor suggests you give some thought to the idea of saving for a rainy day or a rainy day emergency. Janet Marie Tierney joins us now to talk about the concept of an emergency fund. Nice to have you back.
Thank you for having me back.
So there are people that have this windfall coming. They're getting a tax refund. You would contend that this is a good time to start thinking about making sure you have some savings in the bank for an emergency. Let's talk about that. What's the best way to get started on an emergency fund?
Well, I think it's key. You know, everything in our culture is communicating to us, spend the money now. You just don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. Rather than save the money now, you just don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. And if you question whether that's true, how many times have you heard somebody say, have dessert first because life is short and you just don't know what to expect? Or even in the business world, you hear constantly, and it's true of individuals as well, cash is king. A dollar today is worth more than a dollar tomorrow. And we have really embraced that in American culture. Regardless of education level or income level, we really are convinced that that's the right way to go. And you really need to challenge your attitude and change it in order to be successful with saving.
You said regardless of income level. Do you find that people of means are any less likely to save than people who are just barely scraping by?
I get the same excuses for not saving from affluent clients as I do from clients who are struggling to get by with children on a part-time minimum wage job. It's always a little surprising to me. I would have expected that the more money you make, the easier it is to save. The reality is the more money you make, the easier it is to spend. And that's a big part of our culture, not necessarily of our income or education.
Well, what are the excuses that you hear?
I think my favorite one is I don't save because deep down I'm convinced I would tap my savings for irresponsible things. So it's better for me to spend that money on the things that I need now rather than take the temporary discomfort of saving it when I'm just going to blow it on something that's kind of frivolous down the street.
So let's talk about this idea of an emergency fund and establishing really how much that ought to be.
Well, I think you're really talking about a number of months of expenses. And here the experts definitely vary on their opinion of how many months' worth of expenses you should have. My personal favorite, you know, they talk about 3 to 6 months. They talk about 8 months to a year. My personal favorite is to decide what it is you would have to cover in an event of emergency. Do you need to cover 3 months of your mortgage? Or do you accept that you may let your house go into foreclosure and rather than focusing on paying your mortgage, you need to determine how many months of other expenses besides the mortgage you need to calculate on? Now, it's unfortunate 15 years ago if you would have said to someone, is part of your plan for an emergency to allow your house to be foreclosed upon, there would be gasps and shock. But today it has happened so often that unfortunately it is part of the decision that we need to make.
It's an interesting statement that foreclosure doesn't necessarily – does it just not have the same stigma that it once did?
I think the stigma is coming back. I think that as lenders are looking at credit reports, when they're seeing a foreclosure happening 2008 to maybe 2010, even into 2011, they're accepting of the fact that odds are the reason you can't pay me is because a lot of people didn't pay you. A foreclosure, making the decision to do a foreclosure today, I think it carries a great deal more brevity with it than it would have during that time period because the economy is rebounding. If you don't believe the numbers, it's still – you still have to overcome the fact that the bankers believe the numbers. Doing a foreclosure today, I think the stigma has returned to what it was pre-housing bubble burst.
But for the people who maybe have a hard time paying the bills every month, how do you get going with this? It's not always an easy thing to put money away.
Well, and that's where the tax refund season is the best time to do that. Even if you can take part of your tax refund, let's say that you've calculated that in order to forestall any emergency situation, you need about $5,000 of an emergency fund. You're getting a $2,500 refund. I'm not necessarily advocating $2,500 goes into the bank never to be touched until it's truly raining. Maybe $2,000 goes into the bank. You can have fun with $250 or $500. Then look at what you're going to do to save the remainder of that money. It's a matter of attitude. You know, you can be happy with what you have, so you can decide how much you have that you're going to be happy with.
There's a certain amount of discipline this calls for.
It does, but, you know, when we were talking about excuses people give me for not saving money, discipline and lack of discipline was probably the overwhelming response. Well, I don't save like that guy saves because I'm not as disciplined or I'm not as good with money. And I keep reinforcing, it's as simple as making the decision to be disciplined, especially when you have the opportunity to take your tax refund and knock out a significant portion of the amount you've determined that you need to save. The discipline doesn't come from saving money when you buy something that's on sale. As my father would say, to paraphrase him, that's really just reallocating your dollars. You're not really saving any money because you're just going to spend that money elsewhere. The discipline comes from setting up your budget and considering a fast, steady amount of savings, a savings deposit into an account as part of your budget, the same way you would rent or mortgage, the same way you would a car or insurance payment.
Is there a certain amount of math phobia that plays into this whole equation?
Oh, absolutely. And I can understand that. I mean, I'll do a complicated financial equation for you, but I look like a deer in the headlights when it comes time for me to divide up a group check at a restaurant. So I certainly understand that. But there are a lot of tools out there that people can use. One of the tips that I frequently give is as you're going through the store, if you don't want to look like a goofus adding everything up on a calculator, your phone has a calculator. Who's to tell whether you're adding something up on a calculator or you're texting? The other tools that are out there are a number of apps. Mint.com is a budgeting tool online and on your phone is one of my favorites. But I don't make this complicated for my own personal finances. I use PNC's virtual wallet, and that allows me to schedule. You have to spend the time setting it up. I schedule what my payments are going to be, the fixed payments like my mortgage, my car insurance, my car payment. But then I can also schedule when we're getting paid. So my paycheck is in there. My husband's paycheck is in there. And if I want to look at, okay, during the month, what does my cash flow look like? When you tell people to analyze their cash flow, they back off a bit. But it's as simple as saying, okay, if I get paid on Monday of this week and my husband gets paid on Friday of next week and then we don't get paid for the rest of the month, my car payment falls on this date. My mortgage falls on this date. Can I afford to go grocery shopping and do two huge carts full today? Or am I better off waiting until next week? So there are a lot of tools out there to help you do it. Or if you don't want to do something online, it's as simple as getting out a couple colored markers and using a paper calendar.
Although you do look a little strange with the colored markers and the paper calendar as you walk down the aisles of a grocery store.
How many people are really looking, especially if they think you're also texting while you're doing it?
Well, Janet Marie Tierney, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me back.
Janet Marie Tierney is a financial educator in Milwaukee and our personal finance contributor. The new arts and entertainment website Milwaukee Record goes live today. We'll talk with the co-founders when we return on Milwaukee Public Radio. More of Lake Effect Now. I'm Mitch Teich. The loss of the print edition of The Onion and its affiliated Milwaukee AV Club website dealt a blow to coverage of pop culture in the area. It was also a major blow to Matt Wild, who was the editor and really the voice of AV Club Milwaukee. But today, Wild and Milwaukee writer Tyler Moss officially launched their new arts, entertainment, and culture website. Milwaukee Record picks up where AV Club left off and seeks to go maybe a step or two further. Official plans for the site were announced a few weeks ago, but until today, the website has merely featured a picture of Bob Uecker being strangled by wrestler Andre the Giant and a place to sign up for updates. Matt Wild and Tyler Moss joined Lake Effect's Bonnie North in the studio, and Wild shared the story of the new venture.
As many people know, the AV Club was shuttered this past winter. Or as I like to say, shipped off to a nice farm somewhere in the country.
It's resting?
It's resting right now. It's perfectly fine, folks. once that news kind of came down, there was a lot of outpouring from people who were really sad that it was going away. And kind of in the back of my mind right away, I knew that it would be a good time to kind of come up with something to kind of take the place, kind of pick up where AV Club Milwaukee left off. But also, you know, do some new things and take it to another level, so to speak. So that's what we're planning on doing with the Milwaukee Record.
So you guys worked together on AV Club. Is that how you knew each other?
Yeah, well, actually, we only associated primarily over email with that arrangement. We knew each other and we knew each other's writing style. And I think we realized pretty early on that in between both of us, we can satisfy a lot of different areas.
Yeah,
in terms of sports and music and like the general features.
Yeah, you complement each other.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, I was the editor at AV Club Milwaukee, and Tyler was one of the best writers, I think, for the site. Made my life as an editor so easy by just turning in great copy that, you know, I didn't need to basically rewrite from the bottom up. So working together seemed like a kind of a no-brainer idea. And during one of the many, many going away farewell parties for the Onion and AV Club, we bumped into each other. And I think, yeah, we really hadn't met each other or hung out necessarily until one night at Mad Planet. And over a few drinks and a few more drinks, we kind of decided like, hey, like, why don't we kind of, you know, pair up here and we can do this. And it certainly made the whole idea of starting something new a lot more feasible for me instead of just going it alone, which seemed kind of daunting and, you know, a little bit scary. The thought of both of us kind of pairing up and doing it made it seem like, hey, we could maybe
and
pull this off.
Maybe a little less lonely, too.
Yes, exactly.
You know, like hauling that rock all by yourself.
Right,
you
exactly.
Know,
so.
You've got, so as you get ready to launch this, and this is launching today as this airs, what are you hoping to do? Obviously, you're filling a niche in the sense of the music reviews and bringing bands to light. What else are you going to be doing?
Well, I think one of the things I think we did really well at AV Club Milwaukee, and we really want to continue with the Milwaukee Record, is just applying a bit more, you know, critical thought to everything in Milwaukee, but especially something like the music scene. You know, so many people say what an amazing music scene we have, and it's certainly been incredible over the last 5 years. It's really grown by leaps and bounds, but I don't know if the coverage necessarily has kind of kept up with the scene. Too often, I think a lot of local coverage is kind of nice, softball, kind of, oh, here's a new album from a band, and here's where you can listen to it, the end. I think what we did before and what we're going to do now is, like I said, apply a little more critical thought to it and kind of treat these things like new albums and any other kind of city issues as well. You know, treat them as like real things that exist in the world and not just, you know, pat someone on the back for, you know, being a local band and releasing a new album. We're actually going to like, you know, dive into it a little bit more. And, you know, if it's great, you know, we're going to say exactly why it's great. If it's not great, I think, you know, bands can kind of take it now. I think the Milwaukee music scene can kind of take a little bit of criticism.
Has there been that sense that it was so nascent and so kind of soft and struggling a little bit that it really couldn't take real criticism?
I think, yeah, every once in a while, you know, when we would write some things before, you know, I would get accused of the big evil word hating, but it was there was never any hate. It was just you know, applying just some kind of basic criticism to it, and it just doesn't happen all that often in town, or certainly not as much as I'd like to see. And you know, I think for not only Milwaukee but for the rest of the country to kind of recognize and take this music scene seriously, I think the coverage in town needs to take it seriously, and that's certainly something that we plan on doing.
If everything is amazing, if everything is like, well, this is a local thing, this is like a wonderful thing, this is a great band, and the reader doesn't exactly recognize that, if we're like exalting everyone like only because they're local, then the best and most interesting bands will suffer as a result because of that, because they'll be lumped in with these other bands that are maybe not at that point.
It's time for the scene to grow up, is
yeah,
what you're
so.
Saying.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, the coverage needs to grow up, and I think that's where, you know, we're coming in. Think of it this way, and this is a dream I had a couple nights ago, and this will give you some idea of how sad and strange my life is. But you remember the science experiment you did as a kid when you would put in cornstarch in a bowl and mix it with water, and if you kind of like lightly poked it, it was just this goopy bowl of cornstarch and water. But if you hit it with your hand or with a spoon or something, it would, you know, turn into a solid, and you know, your hand would bounce back. So basically, what I'm saying is. The Milwaukee music scene in Milwaukee in general is like a big bowl of cornstarch and water. And we're, as the Milwaukee Record, I think we're kind of like, you know, we're like Mr. Wizard or something, like hitting it with a spoon, giving it, you know, a little jolt. And I think the city is at a point right now where it can take that hit and, you know, just kind of bounce back from it.
Okay. Yeah, that's our new slogan, I think.
Yeah, there you go.
Mr. Wizard, hitting it with a spoon.
Hitting it with a spoon is actually a good band name.
Also a good band, yeah. Big wooden spoon or something. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. I think you should start the Milwaukee Record Band.
Obviously,
would be hitting it with a spoon.
We're on it.
Okay. Right now, is it just the two of you?
Right now, it's just the two of us. We're going to be kind of doing the heavy lifting for our first month or so, but we're excited to bring on board, I think, a lot of great local writers, a lot of people that had written for the AV Club before, a lot of new names too. But like I said, yeah, we're kind of doing the heavy lifting at first, but we're certainly bringing in different voices and different writers as soon as possible. Beyond music, any kind of, you know, city issue that seems to pop up that will, you know, kind of raise my hackles at 2 a.m. when I read it is certainly a fair game for me. We're also going to kind of dip into, dining, comedy, which is, I think, more Tyler's expertise, getting into the Milwaukee comedy scene.
Yeah, and that's something, Tyler, actually, that it doesn't get much coverage at all.
Oh, I would say not at all.
Yeah.
I did my best with it being a relatively a newer or a younger entity. They weren't as immediately open to it because it's an unknown and it's in its infancy, I guess. But I think that if we bring a little more attention, it will help overall. It'll bring a lot more awareness, and it will also bring a lot more encouragement. I feel a lot of the scene is looking for the recognition that it should get. And once it gets it, well, hopefully it'll be like a rolling effect.
Yeah, there seems to be quite a bit. I've been here about 8 years, and certainly in the time I've been here, it's grown a lot. And, mm-hmm. You've got – Comedy Sports, I guess, has been here for quite some time.
Yeah.
But you've got other things going on. And
yeah, there's an open mic, I would say, nearly every day of the week. There's a lot of local showcases, and a lot of them are at some weird places, like the basement of local bars or – at really weird fits, sports bars or at bowling alleys. And I feel like it's a really wonderful thing that it's widely ignored.
How are you planning to differentiate what you're doing from, say, what Third Coast Digest does or On Milwaukee does? Because we seem to have quite a lot, and people are, I think, trying to find their little space.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to make you guys stand out?
I think what we bring to the table is that I think both of us and the site in general is going to be very opinionated. And I mean that in the best sense of the word, in that, we actually have an opinion. We're not out to get anyone, or we're not haters or anything like that. But like I said before, we're bringing, just a bit of critical thought to it, and not just kind of, rehashing press releases and patting people on the back for doing something just because it's local. I think we have a very specific voice that I think we certainly cultivated at AV Club Milwaukee, and I think we're going to continue with the Milwaukee Record. And I think that's one of the things that, again, is kind of lacking in town, just a distinct voice and not just kind of this generic, yay Milwaukee thing. I think we bring a little bit of bite.
Who's your audience? Who do you mostly talk to, and then who do you want to make sure that you're talking to?
Lonely shut-ins, mostly. They're really our number one fans. My mom.
Yeah.
That's basically
Tyler's mom.
That's exactly
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I mean, again, we're looking for people, anywhere from, college age to a little bit older, people who I think have lived in town for a while, who live here and love it here, just like both of us have. Who are ready to kind of, take things a little more seriously, and people who, local music for them kind of permeates all aspects of their life, even if they're a little bit older, starting families, starting careers, that sort of thing. I think music kind of is still a big part of everything that we do. And hopefully, that's the kind of audience we're shooting for.
Is it going to be a subscription site, or are you planning to offer it for free and use advertising?
We're going to be ad based, so it'll be updated daily, all free. So it'll just be there waiting for you in the morning.
Matt Wild and Tyler Moss, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thanks.
Thank you for having us.
Matt Wild and Tyler Moss are co-founders of the new arts and entertainment website Milwaukee Record, which goes live today. Wild was formerly editor for Milwaukee AV Club, which folded as The Onion ceased production of a print edition. Is spring cleaning too complicated for you to even bother with? Hopefully not, but we will ask a clean person for some advice when Lake Effect continues on WUWM. It's Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke. You know, I cleaned my desk last week, more or less. It was my nod to the idea of spring cleaning, or maybe it was just a little bit of guilt for having a messy desk while I got ready to interview our next guest. Jolie Kerr is not your average neat freak. Jolie Kerr takes cleaning seriously enough that she has a devoted following to her website and her Ask a Clean Person column on the website Deadspin. Her new book, My Boyfriend Barfed in My Handbag and Other Things You Can't Ask Martha, takes on many of the cleaning issues she handles online, from no-nonsense advice on cleaning mold out of your bathroom to how to dry the pages of her book if they happen to get wet, to an important lesson in some homes, like how to keep a retainer clean. Jolie Kerr took a few minutes out from cleaning to join us by phone. Welcome to Lake Effect. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, let me ask you a big picture kind of question to start. How much of the cleaning issue that people have, would you say, is about people actually setting aside time to get the job done?
I think that's a lot of it, absolutely. And one thing I always try to do, both in my book and in my online column, is to give people a realistic sense of how much time any given task might take. And of course, there are variables because it depends on the size of the home that you're cleaning or the area that you're cleaning. It also depends, obviously, on how very dirty it is. Some things are dirtier than others. But I do like people to be realistic about the time it's going to take and the energy output that it's going to take. Because what happens otherwise is that people will start a task and quit halfway through. And then that has usually created more of a mess than you had to begin with. So that's no good. So be realistic about the time and energy something is going to take. Dive into it, see it through to completion, and then, you know, go reward yourself.
Well, and it's interesting because if you spend any time at all watching daytime TV, you are going to be inundated by commercials that would lead you to believe that you can do all of these cleaning tasks in much less time than you thought you could.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of times with those products, they're shortcuts, and they don't work as well. And so what you're going to end up doing is spending a lot of money, first of all, for them to get not such a great result that then you have to go over and redo. So ultimately, you'll spend more time. I'm not a huge fan of shortcuts in that way. I do have some that I recommend, you know, things like using dryer sheets to dust that leave behind a little coating that will repel dust for just a little bit longer. Those are good shortcuts to use, but yeah, these kind of gimmicky cleaning tools and products, generally not that great.
The book is hilarious and maybe takes some of the fear factor out of cleaning. But let me ask you, is it the wrong message to take from this that cleaning is going to be fun?
I mean, I think cleaning is fun, but I'm also a very odd individual. No, I mean, I think what I'm trying to do is to impress upon people that it's not the worst thing in the world, and that a lot of times the attitude that you bring to it informs a lot of the experience that you're going to have. So if you go into it thinking that this is going to be the worst task in the world and I'm going to hate this, you know what? It's going to be the worst thing in the world and you're going to hate it. If you go into it and you just tell yourself, you know, this is not going to be the worst thing in the world, I'm going to get it done, I'm going to be happy with the outcome, then it won't be as bad.
At one point you make, for example, I think a good example of this might be if you are going to clean your kitchen floor well, it is just going to be a hands and knees kind of experience.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, mops, you really end up just sort of pushing the dirty mop water around, and the mop itself is probably dirty. It's just easier to bite the bullet, get down on the hands and knees, and just get that floor clean. And then it's done. I mean, it doesn't take that long. The first time you do it, I mean, and I say this in the book, the first time you do it, you're going to curse my name. You're going to hate me. The second time you do it, it's not going to be as bad.
Speaking of floors here, I wonder if you could speak to this. I personally do not have a great deal of my own hair, but I live with several people who do, and it ends up everywhere.
Everywhere.
And
I have very long hair, and my hair is everywhere.
I believe you use the term hair everywhere in this book. What is to be done about all the hair that ends up in a house?
Yeah, so this is just one of those cases where constant vigilance is the answer. So two really good things to do are, one, to have a handheld vacuum, so a small vacuum.
That's not a dust buster, right? We're talking about an actual...
Like a dust buster,
oh, okay.
Exactly. That you can leave in the room or rooms, if you spring for more than one, where most of the hair is converging. So the bathroom is obviously one natural place. And just to, you know, every day, every other day, every third day, whatever, but regularly is the key. Just grab that handheld vacuum and do a quick once-over. And this doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be a super detailed. You're not looking for perfection. You're just looking to maintain. And it takes less than 30 seconds. It's what we do in our own home. So I'm practicing what I preach. Then the other thing is to have a good upright vacuum, you know, canister, upright stick vacuum, whatever model is right for you, and to use that regularly for the deeper vacuuming. You know, again, it really, unfortunately, the answer is just you got to keep on top of it. There's no magic solution that I can give you other than vacuuming.
I wonder if you could identify, say, three or four tools or supplies that ought to be used most often and really could do a lot of things in just about any home.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, a good vacuum is a great thing for all homes to have. White vinegar is a cleaning product that I, you know, the joke in my column is that the answer is always white vinegar. White vinegar will clean almost everything. It'll eliminate mold. It's a great all-purpose cleaner. It's great for glass. It's an odor neutralizer. So that's a great cleaning product. I also really love dish soap. And I think people are surprised often at how basic and simple most of the products that I recommend people use are. I think dish soap is a great product. It's great. You can clean your floors with it. You can get stains out of your clothes with it. Obviously, wash your dishes with it. And another, so you asked me for four, so that's three. So I'll give you one more, which is microfiber cloths and sponges. Those are great for wiping down surfaces, dusting, you know, shining up chrome and stainless steel fixtures and so on. Very easy, also launderable, which is great. So you can just wash them and reuse them.
And as a special bonus, I was also taken by how much you seem to be a fan of, we'll go with a brand name here, Scrubbing Bubbles.
Oh, I love Scrubbing Bubbles. My bubbles. They make me so happy. Yeah, there are other brands other than Scrubbing Bubbles. It just happens to be the one that I use. The product is a foaming bathroom cleaner. And it comes in a can, and you shake that can up real, real well. Spray the product all over the tub, the sink, the toilet, and then walk away. And the bubbles do the scrubbing for you. And then you'll come back after, you know, 10 or 15 minutes and just wipe everything down with a damp sponge or a rag. I love any product that does the bulk of the work for you. And I think most people love that because we are all pressed for time in our lives. I mean, there are very few of us left over who keep house full time. So most of us are juggling homekeeping with work, kids, hobbies, school, you know, whatever else we have going on in our life. So, having products that do work for us is a great thing.
How much time would you spend? You say you spend every day on cleaning.
Well, the answer that I'm going to give you is different from what a normal person should be. So I don't want any of your listeners to be like, I'm not cleaning nearly enough. I probably spend Monday through Friday between 30 and 60 minutes cleaning a day. I don't clean on weekends. You know, the longer cleaning stuff that I do is the days when I'm doing laundry. Obviously, that's just a bit of a longer cycle. But I do a little bit every day. So generally about 30 to 45 minutes of cleaning a day.
And I think one of the rubs that people have on cleaning, to use a poor metaphor there, is that's boring. How do you keep yourself entertained while you're cleaning? Cleaning enough?
Partly I keep myself entertained because I love this job, right? So it's fun for me, but I know that normal people are not like this. You know, I always tell people, put on music. You got to have music on. You'd never go to the gym without music. So don't clean without music. It makes it more fun. It's like, you know, I go to the gym, but I don't particularly like it. But the music kind of helps me get going, and I sing along, and maybe I look kind of stupid at the gym. But when I'm home and no one's seeing it, who cares? Definitely I think putting on music goes a long way in making it a little bit more fun.
And I wonder if you might be into the idea of combining the gym and cleaning and maybe just adding weights to a mop or a vacuum.
That's certainly an interesting idea. I don't think I've heard that one before. But, yeah, go for it.
Well, Jolie Kerr, it's been a real delight. Thank you so much, and I hope we can talk again down the road.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Jolie Kerr's new book is called My Boyfriend Barfed in My Handbag and Other Things You Can't Ask Martha. She writes the Ask a Clean Person column for the website Deadspin and supplements it all on her website as well. The Islands of Milwaukee asks, where do you connect with nature when Lake Effect returns on WUWM? Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. Time now for our weekly series, The Islands of Milwaukee.
Welcome to the Islands of Milwaukee.
This is Maureen Towie from the Islands of Milwaukee. This week our question was,
where do you connect with nature?
It yielded a range of responses, from those deeply connected with nature to those not connected at all.
I have an urban farm in the middle of Milwaukee. We live in the Jackson Park area. I grow a garden that supports both my husband and myself in our small yard, and we have city chickens that give us our eggs, the eggs that we eat.
Where do you connect with nature?
I no longer do. I have three windows. One looks on the parking lot. One looks out on an extension of the building I live in. The other window, there's a big tree, and I never see any squirrels. I don't see any animals in the tree or birds, except last time I saw a few finches. That's all.
We also received a call this week from one of our community partners at the Interfaith Phone Reassurance Program, which uses a network of volunteers to place daily phone calls to older adults who are living alone. These calls help provide some security and connection.
Yes, good morning. My name is Wanda. I'm from the Telephone Reassurance Program, and I ask my clients the question that was, where do you connect with nature? Three of my clients say they just go outside and enjoy nature, and my other client says she connects with nature through God. Have a great day. God bless you. Bye-bye.
We are always excited to hear from volunteers like Wanda, who, through small daily acts of kindness, are helping to keep Milwaukee connected as we age. We have a whole new round of questions coming out, and we want to hear from you. Please call our Islands line and visit our website. Thanks for listening.
You can participate in the Islands of Milwaukee project by calling the Islands hotline at 414-678-1653 or by visiting islandsofmilwaukee.org. When it comes to surgical procedures, there are emergency surgeries, and then there are what's known as elective procedures. But Lake Effect essayist Carrie Carlson can attest that some elective surgeries are really pretty necessary as well.
I inherited a toe with a hump. It didn't protrude like a bunion, nor did it jackknife like a hammer toe. This was a doorknob attached to the second toe on my right foot. When I wore shoes, it throbbed as if it had a migraine. Friends never mentioned my gnarly knob, but my granddaughter did. What's that weird thing on your toe? Then in her unfiltered 9-year-old voice said, "Ew, it's yucky." I'm a plain Jane, nothing like the women who cut off their little toes to wear pointy-toed shoes. I wanted an ordinary toe so I could wear ordinary shoes, like ordinary people. I suggested to my foot doc that perhaps it could be removed, the toe, not just the knob. He laughed. We'll talk about it later. This amputation didn't have to be major surgery, but more like trimming a branch from a dogwood. We'd do it in the doc's office. He would give me happy gas after he asked, "Are you sure you want to do this?" Then he would take a pair of scissors, and with one quick cut, the toe would tumble off before I could say, "Ouch." After a stitch and a bandage, I would drive myself home. I'm a take-charge person, stoic, a guide who takes people on hikes in the mountains, not someone who whimpers and whines. For years, my stoic tolerance paralleled the increasing pain in the toe. The more it hurt, the more I faked indifference to the stabbing sensation in my right foot. I bought bigger and bigger shoes that never fit, even paid $300 for shoes that looked like something my grandmother wore, because the salesperson promised the leather would stretch. He lied. One day, I decided to fix the knob myself and shaved the callus on top with a razor. That didn't work. I took scissors and tried to slice off the top. That hurt. And the worst part? The thing was growing. I could not tolerate a doorknob with a migraine for the rest of my life. My complaints to the doc increased in volume. The first time he said, "You're too young." That's not true anymore. The second time he gave me a look that said, "Gotcha." If I remove the toe, it will interfere with your balance. Well, maybe. After the third request, with an emphasis on, "It hurts all the time," he relented. My mom used to say, "There's more than one way to skin a cat." Could she have meant something like, maybe, cut off a toe? After they prepped me for surgery, I asked, "Can I watch?" "Absolutely not," the nurse said, and placed an opaque screen between me and the foot. As the doc snipped around the toe joint with a small knife, she measured my heart rate, blood pressure, and the oxygen concentration in my blood. "Well, the fuss," I asked, "it's just a toe." After years of throbbing pain, the amputation took one doctor and three nurses exactly 1 hour and 5 minutes. When it came off, it made a sucking sound, followed by a quick pop, as if the doc had pulled a tight cork from a bottle of vintage Cabernet. A nurse placed the toe in a small jar, taped my name on it, and let me view the corpse. "It's cute. Can I take it home?" "No," she replied. "Hospital procedure." "But it's my toe." "Not anymore." "Fine. You can have it." I donated my open sandals to the Goodwill. My four-toed foot is not pretty, but I'm pain-free and happy to revisit my shoes. And the next time I get a pedicure, I'll ask for a 10% discount.
Lake Effect essayist Carrie Carlson is a freelance writer, outdoor guide in the West and overseas, and a former environmental educator. She lives in Milwaukee. That's all for the Monday edition of Lake Effect. I'm Mitch Teich. So great to have you listening today, and I sure hope you'll tune in again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh air is next. It's 11 o'clock.